The following is a class on the Srimad Bhagavatam, 4th Canto, Chapter Number 7, Text Number 31, given by His Grace Sriman Sankarshan Das Hatkikari, recorded on June 2nd, 2008, in Canberra, Australia.
So today we are reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, 4th Canto, Chapter Number 7, The Sacrifice Performed by Daksha. Text number 31. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Brahmo Vacha Naitatsvarupam Bhavato Sapadartha Vedagrahai Purusho Yavandikshet Jnanasya chartasya gunasya chashrayo Maya mayad vyatirikto matastvam. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Dandi Goswami Maharaj Prabhupada. Lord Rama said, My dear Lord, your personality and eternal form cannot be understood by any person who is trying to know you through the different processes of acquiring knowledge. Your position is always transcendental to the material creation, whereas the empiric attempt to understand you as material are its objectives and instruments. Purport. It is said that the transcendental name, qualities, activities, paraphernalia, etc., of the Supreme Personality of Godhead cannot be understood with our material senses. The attempt of the empiric philosophers to understand the absolute truth by speculation is always futile, because their process of understanding, their objective, and the instruments by which they are trying to understand are all material. The Lord is aprakrita, beyond the creation of the material world. And this fact is also accepted by the great impersonalist Shankaracharya. Narayana paravyaktad andam avyakta sambhavam. Avyakta, or the original material cause. Can you come sit up here with another man? Yeah. Is beyond this material manifestation and is the cause of this material world. Because Narayan, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, is beyond the material world, one cannot speculate upon him by any material method. One has to understand the Supreme Personality of Godhead simply by the transcendental method of Krishna consciousness. This is confirmed in Bhagavad Gita 18:55, Bhaktyamam Abhijanati. Only by devotional service can one understand the transcendental form of the Lord. The difference between the impersonalists and the personalists is that the impersonalists, limited by their speculative processes, cannot even approach the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Whereas the devotees please the Supreme Personality of Godhead through His transcendental loving service. Sevon muke hi. Due to the service attitude of the devotee, the Lord is revealed to him. The Supreme Lord cannot be understood by materialistic persons, even though He is present before them. In Bhagavad Gita, Lord Krishna therefore condemns such materialists as mudha, mudhas. Mudha means rascal. It is said in the Gita, only rascals think of Krishna as an ordinary person. They do not know what Lord Krishna's position is or what his transcendental potencies are. Unaware of his transcendental potencies, the impersonalists deride the person of Lord Krishna, whereas the devotees, by dint of their service attitude, can understand him as the Supreme Personality of Godhead. In the 10th chapter of Bhagavad Gita, Arjuna also confirmed that it is very difficult to understand the personality of the Lord. Vandeha Shri Guru Shri Jata Malakamala Shri Guru Vaishnavam Shcha Shri Rupa Sagrajatam Sahagana Raghunatan Vitam Tam Sajiva Sadaitam Savadutam Purijana Saitam Krishna Chaitanya Deva Shri Radha Krishna Padan Sahagana Lalita Shri Vishakanvitamscha. So, what is the point? The point is that you cannot realize God with your blunt material senses. That is not possible. The scientists, they want to understand everything with their blunt material senses. We have to understand scientifically how limited these senses are. We can even look at modern science and understand. It's like a dog. He can hear sound vibrations that you cannot hear. Have you seen they have those special dog whistles? You blow the whistle, no human being can hear it. You can use it to call your dog. They're available on the internet. Special high-frequency dog whistles, you see. So there are sound vibrations beyond what the dog can hear also. And similarly with light vibrations. With our eyes, we can only see within a certain bandwidth of frequency of light vibrations. There's other rays we cannot see. And just like they have ultraviolet rays, you see. We cannot see. So, even beyond what your instruments can measure, what your scientific instruments can measure, there are light rays and sound waves which cannot be perceived. Another example, just like there are so many TV broadcasts, you see. You have TV stations, there are satellite. Right now there's satellite channels. Let's see if that example works. They're actually beaming off. Yes, they're beaming. The satellite is shooting down these waves, satellite waves, TV radio waves. They're shooting them. There are satellite-based radio stations now, satellite-based TV stations. And if you have the proper satellite dish, then you can hear those radios broadcast, so you can see those TV programs. There's hundreds and hundreds of TV programs being broadcast into this room right now, you see. Of all kinds of things happening. We can't see them, but they're happening right now. Those vibrations are in this room at this very minute. Just like when I was a child, there was a famous series called The Lone Ranger. And he would always go on some adventure with his sidekick, Tonto, who was an American Indian, Red Indian. So this is a famous thing when we were kids. Every week we would see what is the latest episode of the Lone Ranger and Tonto fighting evil, you see, riding off on their horses. So those old reruns, they're actually the Lone Ranger and Tonto, they're still riding, they're riding through this room right now, you see. But, I mean, the reruns. But we have no ability to see them because our senses are limited. So if even in some mundane thing, you see, even if the Lone Ranger and Tonto can be having their pastimes right now in this room and we can't see them, we can understand the power of God. You see? Who is millions and billions of times more powerful than some, you know, satellite dish. Some satellite broadcast being picked up by a satellite dish. So what we read about here is not at all far-fetched. A gross materialist may say, oh, come on, beyond my sense perception. But it's just from a simple example of satellite television, which is beyond your sense perception, you depend on a satellite dish to receive it. So how do you get the satellite dish? The satellite company that broadcasts the television program will provide you with a satellite dish for a fee. They will give you the satellite dish. So we're doing the same thing. We will give you maybe we'll not give you a satellite disc, but we will give you the tool by which, just like the satellite TV customer is empowered with the satellite disc to see the satellite TV broadcast, we will give you, if you want to perceive God, we will give you the mechanism by which you can purify your senses and you can directly perceive God. Prabhupada explained that there is a mystic television within the heart. The pastimes of Krishna are actually going on right now. You can see them within, in full color. Not only with color, but also with sound, with smell even. You can even smell the aromas going on in Goloka Vrindavan. Everything is available. It's just a matter of purifying the senses, getting the proper satellite dish, as it were, that allows you to experience the transcendental pastimes of Allura, which are happening right now at every minute. They're available within your very heart. So this is not at all far-fetched. It's just taking the same principle of satellite TV and carrying it one to the next step, that's all. That's all that we're really talking about here. We are the supreme satellite dish company, you see, satellite broadcast company. We are offering to the whole world a mechanism by which everyone can tune in and see the form of the Lord directly. Premanjana charita bhakti valochanena santaksadaiva hridayeshu valokayanti. Yang sham shunjaram achindya gunasvarupam govindam adi purusham tamaham bhajami. So we are simply taking modern day television technology one step further. That's all we're really doing. What we're doing is not at all far-fetched. We're just going one step. Okay, you've expanded the ability to perceive by your instrument. Now we will give an instrument which you can see unlimitedly. You see, we have the perfect satellite dish, you see, by which you can pick up these broadcasts coming from Goloka Vrindavan, and you can see everything that's going on in the spiritual world. You can see God directly. We are giving that training, that instrument. It is the system of bhakti yoga. Actually, the instrument is naturally there for everyone. But we already have that instrument. But it is simply broken. It's in a state of disrepair. You see. You have the eyes with which you can see God. You already have those eyes. But now they are covered by six types of enemies. Kama, krodha, loba, mada, moha, matsarya. Lust, kama is lust, krodha is anger, loba is greed, moha is illusion, mada is madness, and matsarya is envy. So, because our machines are clogged up, our instrument of perception, I mean to say, is clogged up by these six enemies. Therefore, we cannot perceive God. We can hardly see anything. We are blind, even to the basic economic necessities of life. That's why we have built a culture based on petroleum, which is running out now, you see. Can you imagine? We built a whole world in the last 100 years. We built a whole civilization on petroleum, knowing full well it's going to run out. We have no brains even for economic development. Now the petroleum will be so expensive, we won't be able to get food at an affordable price because they have to bring it and they grow it with petroleum powered tractors, and they drive it into the cities on petroleum powered trucks, and they fly it in from the other parts of the world on petroleum-powered airplanes. And when this petroleum becomes too expensive, we won't be able to afford to eat also. Not only will we not be able to afford to drive cars, we won't be able to afford to eat anymore also, unless we learn how to get back to the original agrarian family-based farm. 100 years ago, in the U.S., 100 years ago, everybody had a farm. There was a few people in the cities, but mostly people were living on the land with a farm. They had the cow, they had the ox, they had some horses. And that's how everybody lived all over the whole planet 100 years ago. So we're blind in every possible way by this lust, anger, greed, madness, illusion, and envy. We're even blinded about the basic things like how to get food to eat in a very practical way. So in this Krishna consciousness movement, we are not only teaching people how to see God, but we're also teaching people how to eat, how to get food to eat by going back to the land, the cow, and the bull. You see, then everyone can eat very nicely. And we won't have to work so long hours in stressful job, you see. We can out there in contact with nature, and then we can grow our food, plant the crops in the spring, harvest them in the fall, and the rest of the time we can just chant Hare Krishna, study the Vedas, have all kinds of fantastic spiritual festivals, you see. Singing, dancing, and feasting. Our whole life, our whole days will just be filled with singing, dancing, and feasting. You see. It'll be a wonderful, stress-free life. The air will become clean again. You see, everywhere we can take a breath of air and get high just on the air. Now, when you breathe the air, you choke to death just by breathing the air. People are dying just from the air, you know that? In many cities, people are dying just by breathing the air. They die. That's how poisonous the air has become. So this Krishna consciousness movement is the most practical movement to enable us to see God directly in the past. Come, all the men sit up here. Unless you have a bad back, everyone should sit close. The Zen principle is to come close to the spiritual master, not to stay away for fear of catching some disease, you see. If I have any disease, I hope it's Krishna prema. You can catch that if I have that. So, this movement is actually giving everything we need, how to become happy in this world by getting proper food in a proper healthy way, and at the same time achieving the supreme destination of going back to home, back to Godhead. So, I can ask now if there's any questions. Yes?
Going back to nature, living in nature, and taking care of cows, and but also realistically, when we look at the planet, there's always war. So basically, if a family is, for example, they even want to they want to live like this, what happens? There's always the threat of war, and once you there's a war, then all your possessions are gone.
I can't hear everything you're saying, but I know there was, even during the Vedic times, there was wars going on. It's like the Battle of Kurukshetra.
Yeah.
War will always be there in this material world. But in the Vedic system, the farmers will be out there plowing the land, grazing their cows, right next to the battle. You see, the farmers are never disturbed by the wars. They just simply give 25% of their crop to whoever's ruling. That's all. Their tax is not in money. Their tax is they give a percentage of their crop to the ruling power. So to them, it's not a big deal. Well, whoever wins, that's where I pay my tax. That's all. The farmers would not be disturbed. And the soldiers would come and say, "Where is? Have you seen anyone come?" They say, "Yeah, they went that way." The soldiers, they just give information as they are requested. And whoever wins the war, that's where they pay their tax. That's all. The Kshatriyas engage in the war, and the Vaishyas, they simply engage in their agricultural business. They're never disturbed by war. It's not like nowadays they do war upon the innocent citizens. They murder the innocent citizens. Formerly, a war was just done between the Kshatriya class. And so, it was like a gentleman's duel. It was done according to rules and regulations, like an athletic event. Now we have athletic events, football games, you see, baseball games. Formerly, wars were conducted like athletic events, like, you know, like the Olympic. Who will win? It was actually amazing. The warriors would get together in the evening after the battle and sit around as friends and have dinner together, joking, laughing, having loving exchange, and the next day they would go out in the battlefield and fight to the death. It was just like an athletic. Actually, even today's athletes aren't that friendly to each other after the athletic event. But war was actually very civilized in those days. It didn't disrupt the economic structure of the society. It's not that they would go in and kill and rape and all these kind of things like nowadays. Next question.
In Ramayana, Ram prays Shiva before he was building a Setu Bandhan, and Hanuman is also an expansion of Shiva. Is it good to pray Shiva and Hanuman along with Hare Krishna mantra?
When you water the root of the tree, all the leaves and branches are nourished. Krishna is the root of the entire creation. Aham sarvasya prabhavo matak sarvam pravartate. I am the source of all material and spiritual worlds. Everything emanates from me. So Shiva is actually an expansion of Krishna. We study in the Bhagavatam, we see that Krishna, an expansion of an expansion of an expansion of an expansion of Krishna, is known as Mahavishnu, and from him expands Garbhadakshay Vishnu. From Garbhadakshay Vishnu grows a lotus flower from his navel, from which Lord Brahma is born. When the four sons of Lord Brahma, the Kumaras, were told to get married and have kids, and they wanted to remain brahmachari, and Brahmaji became very angry, and from his anger appeared from his forehead Lord Shiva. You see? So, if you want to get into praying to all the different living entities that have come out of the creation and all the different gods and goddesses, do you want to pray to all of the demigods? Or just, you see, then there's 33 million of them. Each demigod is responsible for a different function. Just like now I'm seeing your eyes are blinking. See, I just saw your eyes blink. You realize there's a demigod that controls them? There's actually a god that controls them. Now, if someone has a disorder where their eye blink, they may want to pray and do puja to that demigod. And also when we pass stool, if we're going to the toilet room, if it's not for some demigod, we would become constipated, you see. So for every single function, there's 33 million demigods. If you want to get into praying to all the different gods for this thing and that thing and this thing and that thing, how many How many pujas can you do in one lifetime? Can you do 33 million pujas? It's not practical. Therefore, instead of worshipping this God, that God, on and on and on and on and on and on, why not just worship the God of the gods, Deva Deva, Lord Sri Krishna? Because by watering him, I mean to say by watering the root, all the leaves and branches are nourished. When you eat, doesn't every part of your body need nutrition? Does your hand need nutrition to be healthy? Of course it does. Your hand requires nutrition for the skin to be healthy. So how does it get that nutrition? Through the bloodstream, you see. So it's not that when you eat, you try to squeeze the food through your skin to get your nutrition directly through the skin. You don't do that. You put the foot in the mouth, it goes to the belly, and then you get your nutrition. So Krishna is like the belly, Krishna is like the root. You simply give your loving service to the Supreme Personality of God, and you see. Lord Shiva confirms that Krishna is the Supreme. It's in the Bhagavatam. He directly says that Krishna is the Supreme, you see. Lord Brahma says that Krishna is the Supreme. All the gods and goddesses. What is that sloka? Om tad Vishnu paramang padam sada pashyanti suryo devya chakshara tatam. It is stated in the Rig Veda. All the gods and goddesses, they are looking to that abode of Lord Vishnu. And that Lord Vishnu, he is simply an expansion of Krishna. So they are all looking to Krishna in his Vishnu expansion as the Supreme. So why should we try to do something different than what is actually the ultimate principle of the Vedic knowledge? This demigod worship is for lower class men who have material desires, who aren't ready yet to surrender to the Supreme Lord. You see, for them there is demigod worship. At least they, because according to Vedic rules, when you worship the demigod, you have to also offer oblations to Vishnu. So the demigod worship is for lower class men who are full of material desires. But they don't become liberated. They remain in karma chakra, suffering birth after birth after birth. So demigod worship is, Krishna says, kamaistaistarhitajana prapanyantenya devata tam tam niyamamashtaya parkitta niyatasvaya. He says, those whose intelligence is bewildered by material desires surrender under the demigods and follow the particular rules and regulations of worship according to their own natures. Krishna specifically says, hrita gyan. You know hrita? It means stolen. Those whose intelligence has been stolen by material desires, they worship the demigod. So, of course, Krishna, the demigod, especially Lord Shiva, is a great devotee also. So Lord Ram, he honors his devotees. We studied last night in the Bhagavad Gita. The devotees are very dear. So Lord Ram, he does honor Lord Shiva. We see how Lord Krishna, he worships Sudama Brahman also when he came to Dwarka. The Supreme Lord does worship his devotees. That's a fact. But that doesn't mean that we should become demigod worshippers. We should simply worship the Supreme Personality of Godhead and surrender unto him. That is all we have to do. It does not require that we should worship any demigod. It's not at all required. Srila Prabhupada, who is the greatest realized spiritual master in the history of the world, he came and he taught us Westerners who knew nothing of Vedic culture how to be devotees. He didn't teach us to worship demigods. He simply engaged us in worshiping Krishna. That's all. So all you require is Krishna worship. There's nothing else required.
But some people, they pray and they do yajna and all. If they invite us, can we participate in their...
Some people do what?
Some people do yajna.
Do some.
Fire sacrifices and worships
of Shiva and...
Worship
like
Shiva?
Yeah, so should they...
Yeah, they're less intelligent. Krishna says, Rita Gyan, they're less intelligent.
Should we go there if they invite us?
Of course not. I wouldn't go to such a function.
But there is another type of worship of the demigods.
What is that?
Another type of worship. Worship really means you follow their instructions. So Lord Shiva says, if you really want to worship Lord Shiva, worship him by his instruction, that worship Lord Krishna. So you are worshiping Lord Shiva by following his instructions.
Yes. No, if they invited me to come for such a function, if they asked me to give a lecture at that function, I would go just in time for the lecture and leave as soon as the lecture was done. I can go anywhere and give, and I can go to any function. I mean, I can even go to a meeting of the Cattle Slaughterers Association. And I'll go anywhere if I can preach Krishna consciousness. But I would go, you know, just in time for my lecture and then leave when the lecture is over. I wouldn't stay for the yagya. It's not necessary. We don't need to attend such yagyas. It's a waste of time. Better we have, you know, invite them to our yagyas. Thing is, you have to realize that that Krishna says, give up all other obligations, just surrender to me. We don't have all these typical, you know, Hindu obligations that we were taught to have don't really apply. They really don't. These social obligations that we were taught that we have to have these things. Those may be, for a materialist, yes. You know, you have to, if people feed you, you know, if you have to, you have so many material obligations to fulfill as long as you're a materialist. But that keeps you bound up in karma chakra. But for a transcendentalist, which is the only way to escape the cycle of birth and death, is to become a transcendentalist, there's no obligations. Krishna says, sarva dharman parityaja. Give up all these duties and obligations. You only have one duty, and that's to surrender to me. And he says, you should approach the bona fide spiritual master and surrender to him, because he will engage you in my service. You see, that's how you become surrendered to Krishna. You surrender to his representative. Tadvidi pranipatena pariprasnena sevaya. So then whatever the spiritual master tells you to do, you do that. That's all. And that's your surrender to Krishna, because he represents Krishna. So we never, such things are a waste. Prabhupada would never told us to attend these different functions. He taught us simply do your Krishna conscious business. You have nothing else to do.
One more question. Mm-hmm. Can we chant 16 rounds without initiation? Can we chant
without being initiated?
Yeah.
Yes, yes. That's how you prepare for initiation.
For how long? I mean, you're not confident to get initiated. For how long you can chant?
Well, I would say 5 minutes would be okay. No, you should actually, if you're chanting 16 rounds, you should take diksha. Because without diksha, you'll always remain namaparadi. You understand? Because the order is, you should take, the order is, Adao, Rupa Goswami has given order. He is our guru. We are called Rupanugas, followers in the footsteps of Srila Rupa Goswami. He has given order, Adao Grashrayam. The very first principle is to take shelter of the bona fide spiritual master. So you're disobeying the order of your spiritual master, Rupa Goswami, by not taking diksha. You're disobeying the order of the spiritual master. So your rounds are offensive if you refuse to take diksha. Of course, some time is allowed. 6 months is mentioned by our Goswami to study, to see who is the bona fide guru. That you have to do.
But I'm not confident yet.
Are you strictly chanting 16 rounds and following the four rules? Mm-hmm. Then you beg the guru to give you confidence. That's all. Say, Guru Maharaj, please bless me with confidence so I can do my duty. Take diksha. You need to have confidence. Actually, the same question was asked by me one man in Germany. I'm not confident I can maintain it. I said, then find a guru who can empower you. By his mercy, you'll be able to. In other words, if you're thinking, I'm not confident I can do it, then you're intelligent. Are you thinking you're not confident to maintain it throughout the life? Is that what you're thinking?
Mm-hmm.
That's intelligent, because on your own you're not. You require the mercy of a bona fide spiritual master. By his grace you can maintain it through the whole night. You simply have to find a spiritual master who has Krishna Shakti, who can empower you to remain fixed in following the basic principles. You have to find a powerful spiritual master by whose mercy you'll become empowered, by his empowering you to maintain it through the whole life. And when you find such a powerful guru, then you should immediately take shelter of him.
Can I ask the question? Is it the power of the guru or is it the surrender of the student?
The same thing. In other words, connecting to his power is the surrender. Understand? Putting yourself under his power, that is surrender. You understand? Is it clear? On your own, how can you do? But when you have the mercy of the spiritual master, then you can... what is that verse? about the... dog crossing, the lame man crossing the mountain. How does it begin? Mukam karoti vachalam pangam lanagate gidam. This way. Tat kripa tamahang zande vande shi guru dinataranam. By the mercy of guru, you see, the lame man can deliver eloquent speeches. I mean, can walk over the mountain, and the dumb man can deliver eloquent speeches, and the person who is lacking confidence can become fully confident. You see, you are the person lacking confidence. So by the mercy of Guru, then you can have full confidence. So you must connect now with the mercy of Guru, you see. And by Guru's mercy, then you will have full confidence. Just like the lame man crossing the mountain and the dumb man speaking very eloquent speeches to impress even the most highbrow intellectuals.
Why my worry is because my husband and children are not God conscious.
They're not devotees?
They are not God conscious. The husband is...
Yes, I counsel many. I feel greatly for you, Mataji. I have many women who are in the same position. It tears my heart apart. I'll be honest with you. I have many ladies who want to be devotees. On the other hand, I have many men who want to be devotees whose wives are not Krishna conscious. It works both ways. You should see all the emails I get from Latajis who want to be Krishna conscious, but their husband is a complete atheist. They have to somehow pacify. Sometimes the devotees will say, well, you just have to do what your husband says. When I have a very sincere young woman in Delhi who really wants to become my initiated disciple. And her husband is completely not into it. And she comes to the temple, she attends the classes. Some devotees tell her, well, you have to do whatever your Prabhu says, you know, because that's your duty as the wife. But I said, no. Your duty, your first duty, is to do what Krishna wants, you see. This idea that your first duty is to serve your husband, that's for materialists, not for devotees. Your first duty is to do what Krishna wants. And then within that, keep your husband as pacified as you can. That's all. You have to understand you have one duty and one duty only, and that's fully surrendered to Krishna. So while you're doing that, do it and just be just the nice thing is, Krishna is more powerful than your husband, and Krishna is in the heart of your husband. Krishna can easily make the arrangements. Your determination simply has to become more strong, more strong, more strong, and then Krishna will give you all empowerment and all help, that your husband will no longer be an impediment for your surrender. And he'll actually, you'd be amazed, he might become a better, we've seen it happen. There was, sometimes the wife, we had a situation in Dallas, one American couple, they joined, but actually it was three American couples came and moved into our community. And they bought houses. They sold their suburban homes to come and move into our community. But one of the six of them was not into it. Her name was Wanda. They used to call her Wanda the Witch because she was not into it at all. But then Wanda, she got initiated as Nanda Priya, and actually she became more Krishna conscious than her husband. Her husband became sort of like halfway Krishna conscious. She became a very empowered devotee, and her husband became, you know, hardly a devotee at all, a little bit of a devotee. It actually reversed. She was the one who didn't want anything to do with Krishna conscious. Now she's become more advanced than her husband. You see? So I would simply encourage, you can stay in touch with me and get on by, and continue to, here, give her the card. You stay in touch with me and I'll continue to guide you. Because I'm guiding many ladies in the same position. And yeah.
What is the duty?
No. They have not properly understood. They're thinking my first duty is to serve my husband and kids. Actually,
even serving husband and kids.
Here's the point. As long as you're thinking I have to serve my husband and my kids, actually you're doing, without surrendering to Krishna, you're actually doing them a disservice. You're actually hurting them. By giving them the first priority over Krishna, you're hurting them. You're not giving them true love. You see, you're blinded by your own attachments. It's actually under the influence of kama, krodha, lobha, mada, matsarya, and moha. When you can actually become fully focused and dedicated on serving Krishna under the guidance of the bona fide spiritual master, then you can truly start to give true love to your husband and true love to your kid. So you need to get beyond the sentimental platform and become really fixed in a scientific, philosophical understanding of what is actual reality. So you can start to think, speak, and act in terms of that factual reality. And that way you won't be bewildered. You see? You won't be bewildered. In the beginning, I'm sure you're probably going like 50-50, like Draupadi. I can understand you're probably in Draupadi's position right now. One hand to Krishna, and the other hand trying to deal with it by your own strength. Draupadi was being you know the story. She was being disrobed in the Kuru assembly. You need to put both hands to Krishna and let him fully take charge of the whole situation instead of you trying to be, you know, do 50-50. One hand taking shelter of Krishna, the other hand trying to control the situation yourself, and that doesn't work. You have to fully put it, fully surrender to Krishna, and let him resolve the whole thing. That's the way to do it. Any more words of wisdom from you, Manaji, in this regard? Did I cover all the points?
Anybody who is guiding somebody and not giving them proper, what is the meaning of proper duty, then they are not guiding properly.
Even sometimes well-intentioned ISKCON members will advise people, well, you have to serve your husband first, but it's not like that. Sometimes neophyte devotees are too quick to give advice. They're trying to help, but they don't always understand the best way to advise. That's why advanced devotees are very important in these kind of things, to be connected with an advanced devotee's guidance. So you can really understand what you really have to do to solve the problem. Otherwise, you just go on for years and years and never become solved.
So we can stop privately because that's a problem in secret.
We're over time. It always happens. Once you get absorbed in Bhagavatam, time stops. You know, it appears to stop. Let's put it that way. It doesn't really stop on the material plane, but it appears to stop. That's how Sukadeva could go for, Pariksha could go for 7 days without even going to the bathroom. He'd be completely transcendental to the material body, hearing Bhagavatam for 7 days. Didn't even get up for the bathroom. Well, they didn't have bathroom, you know what I mean. No eating, no sleeping, no toilet, just Bhagavatam, 7 days straight. It's a really transcendental experience. Gandharad Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai, Srila Prabhupada ki jai.